Now the Mole's Jan Hocken talks with Tim Buckley, one of the authors of the New Scarlet Letters, Sex Offenders, Their Treatment, and Our Challenge.
Welcome to KBOO and the Old Mole Variety Hour, Tim Buckley.
Thank you, Jan.
Well, Larry Bolden spoke about Renee Denfield's book as shedding a light in dark places, and I think there's a kind of affinity with your project here as well, because most certainly this is one of the darker places of the criminal justice system. And indeed, in the foreword to the book, you and co-author Marilyn Callahan say sex offenders are perhaps the least understood segment of America's criminal justice system. As a result, they are subject to the most punitive sentencing laws. Well, in dispelling many of the myths and stereotypes about sex offenders, you and Marilyn Callahan bring considerable experience to this book project. Let's start with some of that experience and what led the two of you to write this book.
Well, thanks, Jan. Marilyn has been a licensed clinical social worker since the mid-1950s, and she, as a social worker, she came across incest almost immediately and then realized that there was very little treatment, a lot of punishment for those caught and sentenced for sex crimes, but not very much treatment. So that's what drew her in that direction. I've been doing a lot of work in reentry in the Salem area since the early 90s, and I met Marilyn as I was a mentor to a young man who had just come out of prison with a 4 years for sodomy. And so I was looking for a treatment provider, and Marilyn worked at that time, did a lot of pro bono work for people that were indigent.
And the book begins in the first chapter responding to the inevitable outcry from victims, although victim stories themselves are manipulated politically, and that's perhaps another point we may get to, but that you both make an effort to acknowledge the tremendous pain and suffering of victims of sex crimes before moving on and generating empathy for people who have committed sex crimes or accused of sex crimes. What was that part of the work like, addressing the suffering of victims of sex crimes versus victims of other crimes?
Well, it's a broad spectrum, as you know, that sometimes the perpetrators themselves have been victims earlier. And so we wanted to acknowledge that a book about about sex offenders also acknowledge that there are a lot of victims, both direct victims, those that are physically, their lives physically and emotionally have become torn up as a result of this action, but also secondary victims of sex offense. Those are the family members and even us in the community, because we have now a crisis or an epidemic of sex abuse in our culture.
And when you say an epidemic, can you say more about that?
Well, we live in a culture that glorifies sex, and at the same time, any crimes of a sexual nature are heavily punished. So you've got youngsters that are high schoolers or even younger who are dabbling in sexuality and find themselves too often felons at an early age as adolescents, some of them charged as adults. And that is part of the crisis we're in.
So there's a kind of combination of hysteria and denial around sexuality in general, which is both everywhere and nowhere, where kids are deprived of sex education in the schools other than your basics, and then when they turn to pornography, it's seen as a sign of extreme moral decay or corruption, and oh my God, what's happening to our youth? And of course, pornography is a theme of this term of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the category of sex offender itself, and how that what that encompasses? Because people often associate the term with pedophiles. Yeah. They get collapsed. But can you speak to that category and how it's broadened or changed over time in the criminal justice system?
That's a great question. It hasn't broadened and segmented enough, in my opinion. A sex offender in most people's minds still refers to the most serious of sex crimes. That would be serial rape and murder, pedophilia, you know, the almost the addiction for having sex with underage children. Because those crimes are so sensationalized, we tend to then think of everybody who comes out of the criminal justice system with a sex offender label as being that serious. So you
as use, being a monster.
As being a monster. And you use the term sex panic or sex, and it is. We're in a panic mode now because we want to put the lid on offending of children, and obviously because most sex crimes are not even reported, we have just hit the tip of the iceberg, if you will.
Why do you think, even within the criminal justice system and prisoners I've spoken to, including at Oregon State Penitentiary where you work, often have the most contempt for sex offenders, I think, though probably a more differentiated set of distinctions and being directing contempt toward offenders of children? Why do you think this is seen as the most horrific kind of offense?
Well, if you look at child molestation, it's the ultimate in deflowering or taking away the innocence of humans that don't have the capacity to choose themselves, and it's
an kind of an uncomplicated victim that we're dealing with here in terms of the child is representing innocence, lack of volitional power, decision-making power, so that part of all of us that wants to claim that status as the uncorrupted victim gets perhaps carried into that identification.
Right. And then I would add to that, we live in a culture that tends to create an us and them scenario, right? So everybody... many of us love to have someone else that we look down upon rather than seeing ourselves all as equals. And so even in the criminal world where you've got lifers that have murdered someone, taken someone's life, they can still find it in themselves that they're not as bad as a pedophile, for example. And I think in the classes that we all teach there that there's an opportunity and a great success at getting people to look at that dichotomy and to come to a place of new understanding about me versus you.
So what have you found is the genuine picture of the range of outcomes of people who are charged with sex crimes? You've said there are stereotypes and assumptions that these are untreatable people who are unresponsive to interventions, that's a common stereotype and misconception held by politicians and policymakers as well as the general public.
Yeah, and some treatment providers. You know, there's a line in the book that says one of the treatment providers that we talked to said the only cure for sex offense is a bullet to the head. Well, in Marilyn's case, in her 50 years of treatment, as well as these are also borne out with Department of Justice statistics, that 8 out of 10 or more of people who go through sex offender treatment have no more criminal activity whatsoever.
What about the sex offender registry system? Can you speak to that? Because that has been, of course, the response to the point you make in the book that most people who are in prison as sex offenders are ultimately 80% or so are ultimately released to their communities. So the response to this has been the registry system that is supposed to serve as, you know, a kind of warning system to the community. What about that system?
Well, I want to draw attention to a nonprofit called the Oregon Voices, and it's a good resource for people who want to know more about this. But it was one of the board members on that told me that the study of people on the registry is that less than 5% of people on the registry already commit another sex crime. So it suggests that 96% of all new crimes of sexual assault are created or perpetrated by people who are not on the registry. The registry also unfairly weighs on adolescents. So I think one of the things that we need to change in Oregon as a law is to make sure that those that are charged as juveniles do not then get bumped up to the adult system, because there's a very robust, comprehensive sex offender treatment program in the juvenile justice in Oregon, the Oregon Youth Authority, and it's highly regarded nationwide. So I think that that's one area of the other part of the registry piece that is pretty onerous is that cities and municipalities have zones around parks and around schools and where kids are going to be frequenting. And sometimes those overlapping circles prevent anybody that's on the registry from living within that radius. And that often pushes people to an industrial zone or out onto the railroad tracks or down next to the river, where, in essence, there is no place for people to live. And when you do that, you exclude people out of society. And when you do that, you're asking for them to reoffend. When you don't include people back in and create a way to heal that wound, you're asking for people to act strangely.
And that speaks to the one of the main titles of the book, the New Scarlet Letters, that there's a shunning and a shaming that also seems to serve to uphold a sense of righteousness on the part of people who are out, inside the fold, in shunning those kept outside the fold. And that's another point you address in the book, is how sex offender circulates within political discourse as the others, the ones that mm-hmm. shall not be forgiven, other than the politicians who seem to find ready forgiveness.
One of the things that Marilyn does with each client is at the beginning of their 18 months to 3 years of work together, is she says, the outcome I want for you is for you to become your own therapist. And I think that's good advice for everybody, because we all have thinking errors, we all make mistakes, we all have bias and judgment. And the treatment program that she works with people is to get them to understand their own innate qualities and to build on those strengths rather than the shaming piece. And I think that's...
It means both recovering a sense of your own goodness and capacity as a person, but also confronting the disturbing and destructive aspects of yourself and what you've done.
Yes, absolutely. There's two parts to it. One is taking accountability, being responsible for the crime, the harm, the damage that you've done to your victim, but also then the support piece, which is how do we create a way for you to come back into the fold, back into society, in a way that is healthier.
And I think that's an example of where psychology and psychotherapy bump up against the constraints of the political world, too, that you can become your own therapist and work with these issues, but if you're still cast out of the realm of normalcy, you're kind of pushed back into old scripts. And so how do you and Marilyn, who work on the psychotherapeutic front, bring, confront the political barriers?
Well, that's a great question, Jan. The Marilyn was perhaps unusual in the world of treatment providers. She went outside of the traditional role of therapist and became an advocate and a champion for her clients. That meant sometimes going to the legislature to get laws changed, which she did. It meant working with the parole and probation officers to make sure that they were on the same page. It also meant working with community organizations like Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, which in the last few years did a pilot project called Circles of Support and Accountability. And that is...
Is it related to restorative justice in a sense?
It's very much a restorative justice model. So it broadens the pool instead of it just being the court and the cops against the offender. It broadens the conversation and the involvement of the community in making sure that the person is held accountable as well as given an opportunity to come back into right relationship with the rest of the community, including the victim.
And I think this speaks to the subtitle of the book, which is Sex Offenders, Their Treatment, and Our Challenge. And so you try to bring the problem from the they and them or the other into the fold of the rest of us. And just in closing, what about that challenge and how you see a book like the one you and Marilyn have co-authored as contributing to that?
Well, the book is not academic, so it's meant for parents to read and to bring the shame of incest out of the closet. It's for treatment providers to use. It's for correctional people. It's for reentry people. And I'm really pleased to see that the churches have come forward in the last decade to show up and try to fill gaps in our culture that have been left empty by the lack of leadership in the political realm.
Or the punitiveness.
Yes.
Well, I want to congratulate both of you on such a brave project as well as an informative one. This is Jan Hawkins talking today with Tim Buckley, co-author, along with Marilyn Callahan of S.O., The New Scarlet Letters, and subtitle Sex Offenders, Their Treatment, and Our Challenge. Thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. And the book is available on Amazon.
Okay, and we'll be on our podcast link sometime in the next few days. Encourage people to read it and get back to you on their experiences with the book.
Great. Thank you very much, Jan.